This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we have an extraordinary experience ahead. Ray Grasse is with us. 22 years ago on this show, 22 years ago on this show, something amazing happened with this phenomenally accomplished astrologer. And you're going to believe that in spades in a few minutes. And author and seeker that is relevant right now. I would like to welcome Ray Grasse back to Dreamland after a fairly significant amount of time. Ray, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, you've been on since. We've had a few sessions.
Yeah.
The 22 years ago. Let's go back to that session and tell us your memory of what we were talking about when we began to talk about the future of the UFO phenomenon, which in those days was basically still just a laugh that was believed by a smattering of people. And I was still going out there in the public enduring rectal probe jokes, and you know, all of that stuff was going on. Yeah. But not in your head, not at all. Let's talk about that.
Well, you were interviewing me about my second book, Signs of the Times, which is about the age of Aquarius. And it's a futuristic sort of book talking about the trends that are going to unfold. And one of those trends I was suggesting in the book was that the coming age has a lot to do with space travel and contact with other non-human intelligences and things like that. And I suggested some possible time frames that people want to look at. And one of those was when Uranus came back around to where it was when it was discovered in 1781, which was in the sign of Gemini, tropical sign of Gemini. I said that every time Uranus has come back to that point, a planet returned, like we have on a birthday, the sun returns, well, outer planets return, all the planets return, and to where they were at a certain point. And I said that the years 2025 through 2033 would be a very important window for disclosure of our contact with non-human intelligences. And part of the reason I said that was that the second return, the discovery of Uranus in 1781, accompanied synchronistically the birth of aviation, lighter than air travel, with the Montgolfier brothers' hot air balloon in France.
Right.
There's a great symbolism in aviation in terms of breaking free from tradition, breaking free from old ways of thinking, from ground-based perspectives. And then in the 1860s, during the next return of Uranus, we had further aviation breakthroughs in terms of, it was a time when Jules Verne was writing in 1863, 5 weeks in a balloon. And then in 1865, Jules Verne wrote From the Earth to the Moon. This was in the zeitgeist then. And then in 1947, when Uranus came around another time, was to the, essentially to the week when the Roswell crash happened in New Mexico, as well as that was the time, of course, when a few weeks earlier, when Kenneth Arnold's famous incident, June 24th, I think it was, and also I think the Shag Harbor incident and the first Men in Black incident, all those things happened during that return. So based on those things, amongst a few other points, I felt that the year 2025 would inaugurate an important new phase in this contact with NHI. And it's pretty fascinating how, now technically Uranus doesn't go into Gemini until July 7th, I think it is, but you have to give a window to these things. And just in the last few weeks, now we also have Pluto in Aquarius. So there's a double whammy of archetypal energies working now towards pressing the envelope. And it's almost as though a dam is breaking.
Let's go back to Pluto in Aquarius. What is the significance of that?
Pluto takes about 240 or so years to go all the way around the zodiac, and Pluto in Aquarius. Aquarius is, like I was starting to get to with the age of Aquarius, Pluto has that futuristic, progressive quality to it, politically, technologically, spiritually, philosophically. And so Pluto in Aquarius, like right after Pluto first moved into Aquarius, it's been going back and forth into Aquarius from Capricorn into Aquarius. But right after Pluto moved into Aquarius in 2023 was the first, I think it was the first Dave Grush congressional talk. It was also when ChatGPT and AI just exploded into the situation. And there were a number of other things. And so Pluto into Aquarius by itself, I think, tends to show this broader perspective, this futuristic perspective, higher technology, AI, artificial intelligence. But you combine that with the Uranus return that's coming up. It's exact in 2031, but it's already starting to kick in. And it's going to get stronger over this coming year, the next 12 months, at certain dates. You know, I think that around the first half of July is very important. May is very important because of some things going on. And then in late August and early September, Uranus is going to be standing still like it is right now. You and I are talking right when Uranus is changing directions. It actually changes, I think, in 2 days. Today is, I don't know when this is going to broadcast, but it's today is Tuesday, the 27th, I believe.
And yeah. As we're going along, I'll let the listeners know, give them some perspective here. Okay, it's going to be on broadcast starting on February the 21st.
Hmm. Okay. Well, in the last, whenever a planet is changing directions, it's like a branding iron effect. It slows down and it increases the intensity of that planet. And we've been under very intense Uranus for the last 2 weeks, and it will continue for the next couple of weeks. And just in the last few days, we had that thing happen with the Chinese firm yesterday.
Yes.
What was that called?
Deep Mind.
What's that?
Deep Mind.
Deep Mind?
I think it's called Deep Mind. Yeah, I've been using it.
I thought it was Deep Seek, maybe not. But in any event, there's a shakeup. And in the last...
Phone, of course.
I'm sorry, what?
DeepSeek. Yeah, DeepSeek.
In the last couple of weeks, the extraordinary interviews that Ross Coulthart has been doing, as well as Jesse Michaels and the fellow from Good Trouble, you know, I forget the person on there.
Matt,
yeah. It's just incredible what's been going on just in the last couple of weeks. And it's, I think, going to be very strong the next week or two. That we're actually watching, I think, three different revolutions of a sort taking place that are converging. The one is the NHI, UAP, UFO thing that's happening as a result of Jake Barber and Lou Elizondo and all these others. The second one is the telepathy tapes revolution that's taking place. And you just had on your show, I guess, Kai Dickens
and Diane Hennessy-Powell
yes.
in a couple of weeks. Or the week before this show is airing. It's classic, in other words. But you know, when I heard that, someone texted me the podcast, the telepathy tapes, and immediately I was locked into it. I went to the Soul Foundation conference, where there's a lot of movers and shakers on both sides of the fence in the current terms of the Close Encounter community, the government, et cetera. It's quite a conference. And I just talked up the telepathy tapes there to everyone, because telepathy is the future of this species. We can all do it. It's not just the unvoiced who can do it. We can all do it. And we will learn not how to do it. We will learn to notice that we can do it. That's the next step. Go ahead.
Well, I think the telepathy tapes are radical in other ways too, such as what these autistic individuals are talking about goes way beyond even telepathy into questions of survival of after death, a reincarnation. It blows open a lot of different old paradigms. Now, who knows whether it's going to be skeptical? I mean, accepted by the skeptics.
Of course, it is.
That's why they're trying to shore up the research protocols, and I think that that's going to happen. But then the third revolution that's taking place, that's all converging as a result of these interpenetrating dynamics, is the AI thing. And there's somehow a connection between all three of those in terms of, it might be what you referred to as the fourth mind. It might be some sense of there's some shift in the intelligence, in the mentality of humanity taking place. It may not be all positive. It's nothing's all positive, but it's definitely something happening that's very profound, and it's been gaining a lot of momentum just in the last few weeks.
Yes.
You know, but I wanted to add that to the mix, because I do think that's all tied into what the stars are suggesting with this very profound seismic tectonic shift that's taking place. Did you want to add anything else to that?
Well, you've got me thinking so much. I'm behind my own questions in a way. I think that one of the things that we have to work on is what to call this new state of consciousness. Because when you say telepathy, you think in terms of sort of science fiction novel mind, where people are talking just with their minds, and that's part of it. I have a trigger. In other words, there's a word that, if it starts to be repeated in my mind and it sounds not like my thinking but like a voice from the outside, then I know to take my attention out of my thought processes and move it into my body and try to quiet my mind. And in a few moments, there will be a telepathic conversation. In other words, an actual conversation with somebody who is talking to me telepathically. It doesn't happen often. It's not an everyday thing. It happens once in a coon's age. But my point is this: beyond that, there is a whole different way of being. And let's talk a little bit about the spellers and what they are telling us, that you have to be kind and you must not lie, or this basically isn't going to work. Now, and yet I know people in the intelligence community who are actively telepathic, and they are not kind and they are not truth tellers. So what gives here? Where are we with this is what I don't understand. Do the stars suggest anything, Ray, or do you have any response? Because you're also a profound spiritual seeker, which we'll get into later, but what's your response here?
Well, first of all, it's interesting how closely what you just said ties into what Jake Barber was saying at the end of that long form interview that Ross did with him, where he talks about the attitude is so important in terms of making the contact. And that he even mentioned that one point about blessing the technology before it gets used, and the idea of pure intention. And the purer the intention, this is my words, not his, the more likely it is there's going to be that contact. So there's that, I think, profound intersection between the telepathy tapes research and what people like Jake Barber are talking about.
Yes, contact, real contact, actually, that leads into communion is in that space somewhere.
Yes.
Because this is where the visitors communicate. This is where their mind lives. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
And so we have to find a way to live there. And we have our country, in the United States in particular, is at present, it seems to me that the ruling class in this country, and I don't mean just the Republicans I mean the whole ruling class from left to right, is way, way outside of that space, way outside of it. Like the left won't, they're still with in the world of UFOs or reflections on the cockpit window. I'm serious, they are. They're absolutely zero, zero. You go to the London Review of Books, which just published a long, scathing critique of the whole thing, that failed to even, I think it was the London Review of Books, that failed to even address any of the evidence meaningfully or significantly.
Right.
And the thing is, the cases that the case that they consider is open has been closed already for years, and now is virtually closed on an official level, but they still stay there. And on the far right, you have a massive confusion with billionaires having a very fancy conference at the Esalen Institute, which they bought out for a week, I believe, or a weekend, where they were basically trying to get scientists and experiencers from within the DOD and themselves together to figure out how to monetize this. Now, this is these two, and then of course in the far right religious world, you get the demonology, the demons thing, and so the extremes are failing, both of them, in different ways. They're failing. Where do we find a community that can actually engage with this consciousness successfully? Because it's not on the far left and it's not on the far right. Where are we, Ray? Where do we go?
That's a good question. I think that the more people that see testimonies like Jake Barber's and actually take the time to, let's say, listen to the Telepathy Tapes podcast episodes and just do research, there's always going to be fringe elements and extremists for any issue.
Yes.
And you were asking me about the astrology of all this. And I think that, you know, what I'm describing here with Pluto and Aquarius and Uranus coming back around to its return point, which, like I said, is exact in 2031, but it's already starting and it's going to be in effect to the early 30s. I think it shows a massive shift in the zeitgeist in terms of openness to new, bigger ideas. But there's going to be good expressions of that and bad expressions of that. There is with any shift. Pluto and Aquarius back in the late 1700s, it gave us the Declaration of Independence. It also gave us the French Revolution and the beheadings and the guillotines and all that. There's going to be extremes. And there's no easy answer to how we try to find a middle. It's up to each person to inform themselves of those, you know, the actual facts on the ground. There's always going to be the nuts on the left and the right with this.
But the thing is, they're actually not nuts. These aren't fringe people. The whole left, the core of it, of its intellectual and scientific approaches, feels this way, like neurology. I'm speaking of the entire discipline of neurology. If you come to neurology like Diane Hennessy Powell did, with the idea that consciousness may exist outside of the brain, you are outside of the profession. You're pushed out. And she had to take a mental health test to get her license to practice medicine back.
She did get it back, though.
She did get it back, but that's not the point. And then her book disappeared from Amazon for unknown reasons, because apparently people within that community prevailed upon Amazon to take the book off. And she's been working to try to get it back on since July. Now, that is oppression. And it's not a fringe group that's doing it. Those are powerful people doing it. On the right, you have this unbelievably blind attempt to chimpanzees on the right are trying to figure out how to drive a car. And they're not going to get anywhere. But those of us in the middle of this, we can touch the subtle edges that you touched 22 years ago, Ray. That's why you're here today, because you could be a leader in this. You can do this, Ray.
Part of what Pluto in Aquarius means is the power of the masses, the power of the collective. Pluto in its opposite sign, Leo, is more or less the power of the king, of the leader. Power in Aquarius is grassroots power. And I think that, yes, you're absolutely right about the fact that there is this pushback, but it is like a dam is breaking. And yes, you have skeptics like Nick West, and you've got the powerful figures that are trying to clamp down on it. But it's like, you know, the fingers can hold back in the dike only so long before it's going to finally break. And I think it has a lot to do with simply making more average people aware of what's going on. I think there's a groundswell. I think that, for example, the Ross Coulthart and the Diane Powell and Kai Dickens work and so many other things, they're slowly, I think, lighting a fire in a mass sort of way. You know, the telepathy tapes for a time there were it was the biggest, the biggest streaming podcast in the world. That's saying something. That says there's an appetite out there for this. And that gives me a lot of hope that there can be this group effort to try to move the needle.
Interestingly enough, on a funding level, Kai is trying to fund a documentary. That's how it started in the first place. She's a documentary filmmaker, not a podcaster. And when she couldn't get the money to do the documentary, she turned into a podcast, but became huge. But there's still this reticence on the part of funding people with money, I'm not talking about foundations. I'm talking about high net worth individuals who are interested in funding things in this kind of area.
Yeah.
A strange hesitancy that has, I think, something to do with a subconscious fear of losing control. And this now, and when I say on their level, losing control means economic threats of an unknown kind, and it also means with everyone, a sense of losing control of yourself and your own mind. The visitors all have, they basically, the tall ones that are about 5 feet tall, have each one a separate personality, a separate persona, and they have an array of smaller ones that are linked to them and also very brilliant, but they are essentially projections of that individual. And that individual, in turn, is linked to a collective mind. So the mind, they have one mind, but many, many millions of personalities. That is our problem. We don't have that link to a single mind, and we're afraid of it.
Huh. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Well, yeah, but I've lived with them. I know I've also been in that mind, and I have to tell you, it is... You know, they present a fierce face to the outside world at times because they're here being shot at all the time. I mean, they're having a hard time here. They're extremely careful to deploy only their avatars, the little short ones, in the context of dealing with our militaries around the world, because these beings are going to get killed, and they know it, and they don't want that to happen to themselves. So, you know, we're basically, when we're shooting these things down and they're taking the bodies to Fort Detrick and everyone's looking at them, what we don't understand is we're chewing the toe of the boot, not the guy that's up there, because the guy that's up there is way ahead of us. They've done this before. They know the difference between a speaking culture and a non-speaking culture. They are a non-speaking culture. They do not have vocal cords. Theirs is all telepathic. Ours is all voice. And how somewhere in the energies you're talking about is an answer to how we respond to them. I just know it. I mean, this conversation is kind of going off the rails because I'm realizing as we talk that you've got something that I'm trying to get to that you don't know you have. So let's work on that.
Okay.
Tell us about the energies behind the astrology of this period that we're in right now.
Like I started to say before, it has a lot to do with the collective. Not only Pluto in Aquarius, but the coming age is an era of a collective intelligence now on the extreme side, that's like the Borg in Star Trek, hive mind, you know, no individuality. And on the other hand,
forget it, they're not even close to that. They have high levels of individuality. Right.
Well, I mean, that could even be in a mundane sense, the way that the culture is being run with mind control by corporations, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, this is something that the last time Uranus and Pluto were both in, Uranus was discovered in Gemini and Pluto was in Aquarius in the late 1700s. People were trying to work this out in a very similar way in terms of what is the relationship of individual rights to the collective needs. So, for example, we the people, but then they had to come up with a Bill of Rights that didn't allow for the group to squash the individual, so to speak. Whereas France, with the French Revolution, didn't quite work that out. And so the masses were everything and the individual meant nothing. So you could run them off into guillotines and all this sort of thing. There was a struggle to work out that balance of individual to group. And I think we're seeing the same thing right now in terms of, and it's interesting to hear what you're talking about there with, you know, maybe this new intelligence, or I should say plural intelligences that we're going to be encountering, you know, what is the relationship of the individual to, you know, this new kind of mass mind that's emerging? I think AI is part of that. I think there's a radical shift taking place. And it's not going to be an easy transition, I don't think. I'm grasping for something here and I don't quite get it. But I think that in the next 7-8 years or so, there's going to be this struggle, especially as we get more in touch with those intelligences of kind of grappling with these issues. We're at a very early stage of this right now. I'm very curious, what do you think is the solution to kind of resolving this?
Well, let's continue to work on that together.
Okay.
There's another thing. This show is supposed to make money, and I've forgotten all the breaks. It's typical. And I don't have much money. I live in a little apartment, and I have friends who have just scads of money, who have been in this field for years, fewer years than I have, and have shows that have half a million listeners every week, and their YouTube money is huge. I have a very small audience by comparison, but it's an incredibly discriminating and highly intelligent audience that contains probably 70% of them are in active contact with the visitors. So this is really where it is, even though those other shows are a lot bigger. But it means that my YouTube income is about $200 a month. So this whining is leading into the break, folks. We'll be right back.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind. Totally new. Incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon.
Okay, we're back with Ray Grass. Now, I'm not going to edit any of this, Ray. When we were on break, Ray said very politely, you need to edit any of this. Go ahead. I've been doing this for too long, and basically what my audience has here is me and my guest as we actually are. There's nothing formal about this show, and it hasn't been for a long time. If you hear me back in the old days, in the early shows in the late 90s, the early 2000s, it's very formal and formal questions and stuff. I don't live in that world anymore. I'm interested in pulling out of you what you have to offer. And so are you, because you're struggling right now to get to something that you've never quite gotten to before about the energies of this. And let's go back and explore a little bit about where astrology, where did you come to astrology from? Because we can find out a little bit about how those energies drew you into who you are today. And maybe that can begin to get us to an idea that will bring some closure to this show, I hope.
You know, it's that's a great question. And for me, astrology, which I first started learning 50 years ago, it was a college class, believe it or not, in Chicago. And what entranced me about it was a portal into a different way of thinking about the world, what might be called a synchronistic or archetypal or symbolic worldview. So that things aren't simply, it's almost as though the world is not this mass of atoms and matter, it's fields of meaning. There's a poem by, I can't remember her name, something, the world is not composed of atoms, it's composed of stories. I can't remember the poet's, her name. But it's a radically different worldview, and I personally think it does tie in to what the visitors might be teaching.
I think you're right on the money. I think that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
You know, it's like nothing, there are hidden cycles, there are hidden patterns, and the timing of these things, like, you know, like in your horoscope, for example, I won't say, you know, not divulging personal stuff here, but
you were born during personal in my life.
Well, you were born during that return of Uranus in the 40s. So you're plugged into that energy. You know, you're Uranus at 13 Gemini is right on top of my sun at 13 Gemini. And Uranus is coming back around again, you know, to where it was back in the 40s and where it was before that in the 1860s and back when it was discovered in 1781. And so there is this, I don't want to call it a magical worldview that astrology teaches, because that's got such a bad term in anthropology and, you know, psychology.
The magic is a science we don't understand yet.
Yes. So it is a, like I said, a symbolic, a synchronistic way of looking at the world, the things that happen to us. You look at the chart, someone asked me yesterday, can you see someone that has had an experiencer from their horoscope, someone that's had abduction experiences, someone that has contact with higher intelligences? And I said, yes, you can't tell it precisely because the chart is not that precise in terms of concrete facts. It is archetypally. And so these things happen to us, like the visitors may come or the experiences happen at certain times that are tying into our own horoscope, you might say. And the same goes for the culture. When these major flaps occur, for example, or the Roswell crash occurring right when the planets were aligned in a certain fashion, it's all part of a design, you might say. And it's a different way. I think it's a trans-rational way of thinking, a symbolic archetypal. It involves logic, but it's an archetypal logic. And I think the visitors, I have to believe there's a connection here to what these intelligences have to offer us and how they view things. I'm getting a bit off track there. I'm not quite sure.
No, that's okay. They listen, I'm so high on astrology. You know, when I started with this stuff back in the 80s, I was totally secular. You tell me astrology, I would snicker. UFOs, I would say, in fact, I would say to friends, I don't want to talk about that. Of course, that was because I was hiding something from myself, but I didn't know that. I just thought it was bullshit. I was not an atheist, but I was on a spiritual search, but it was basically a secular spiritual search. That's where I was. Then the visitors come blasting into my life and turn me upside down, shake me out, shake everything out of my pockets, and toss me out of their flying saucer naked and afraid. And here I am today, not naked anymore, not afraid anymore, doing this instead. And the energies that were involved all had to do or were intimately connected with the astrological situation as it moved along. That's why you could correctly predict this 22 years ago, because they use it too. But the difference is, it's not magical thinking to them. It's science. They understand how the the skin and muscle and blood of the universe works in the body of reality. And that's what astrology is. It is a journey into the workings of the body of reality.
That's a good way of putting it. The way one of my early astrology teachers put it was, he said that astrology is simply astronomy symbolically interpreted. It takes the same basic facts of astronomy, but infuses those with meaning. And you know, like Mars isn't just a mass of iron and rock up in the sky. It has a certain archetypal meaning. The fact that Uranus is changing directions right now has a certain meaning. The fact that you are born at a certain time, there are these patterns of meaning that reflect who you are and what you came here to do, I think. That's my belief anyway. So astrology is not that far removed from astronomy and science, except that it's science with meaning. There's that element of meaning that adds a dimension to it that isn't there to a literal eye. You have to use a somewhat metaphoric eye, a symbolic eye, in order to interpret it, which I think most poets do. Most, you know, why is it that Melville could write Moby Dick the way he did and draw together these extraordinary symbolic ideas the way he did? He wasn't writing a science textbook. You know, there was...
No, he wasn't exactly, but he... Or why did Walt Whitman have the mind he had at that particular time? Because Walt Whitman's reflection, America was a very equivocal place, but it was a human place at the time. And it was going through the Civil War and everything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was an extraordinarily subtle and powerful spirit there that these men could capture and interpret into the world in voice and literature.
Yeah, I just wrote an essay, I haven't published it yet, about the 1800s and the extraordinary energies that unfolded in the 1800s, the middle 1800s in particular, with the discovery of Neptune in 1846 and other planetary things that were happening throughout that century. But there really is a zeitgeist. There really is a very profound texture and atmosphere of ideas that exist at any given time. And some people plug into it more than others. And some of us plug into certain parts of that zeitgeist. You know, it's like you're clearly plugged into some things. I'm plugged into a little bit more of the astrological side of it. And I think that the zeitgeist shifts. One of the things that astrology can show us is how the zeitgeist is shifting. And it's shifting in a very tectonic way right now, just in the last few weeks. And I think 2025 and 2026, it's going to be a game-changing period in terms of it's kind of turning the zeitgeist upside down with things like the spellers and things like the whistleblowers that are coming out and the AI. The AI is, to me, that's the wild card. That's who knows what's going to happen with that, because one of the things I also said in my book back in 2002 was that the rise of Uranus is tied to technology. It's tied into the higher mind. It's tied into computers, to machines. And each of the swings around that Uranus has made has brought major shifts, like in the late 1940s with computers and rocketry and quantum physics and atomic work. And now we're coming up to what could be the rise of the machines. And in terms of the next 6-7 years, could be a time when, you know, can we keep control over the technology, over AI? And that, to me, I think there's incredible things that could be done with AI, but I also am not naive about the potential dangers of that.
You know, something that Jake Barber said when he was on with Ross was very concerning to me in one way. And although I have figured it out more now, and it's not so concerning, he said that as he was picking up the machine he was talking about, it left something, left it and came into him and possessed him. Yeah. A beautiful feminine energy. And I thought to myself at first, this is dangerous, because he's, you know, I've had that happen and I've lived with that, and I had to transform possession into communion and a sense of mutuality, or I would belonged to this presence as part of it in that way. And, you know, Annie, this happened a long time ago, and she was the one, she understood what communion was. It's a sharing of being. It's not one being taking over another. And I thought, well, he's in a dangerous situation here. But at the same time, I also realized that what it was doing was, this was not a weapon. It was a sort of anti-weapon, because here was this guy, this is engaged in shoot downs and belligerence and so forth. And it sent in this calming effect. Now, years ago, I've had enough contact with the materials to know this. When Jacques Vallée and Diana Pasolka and Gary Nolan were first starting on analyzing the materials, I said to them, be careful, because when you're looking at these materials, they're looking back at you. And that happened to Jake. It actually didn't look back at him. It came into him, because these are ensouled machines.
Yeah.
Now, where I'm going is this, with this long thing, and pardon me for being too complicated, but I'm always too complicated. If you don't like a complicated podcaster, don't listen. In any case, where I'm going with this is this. Will AI become ensouled in some way? I go back to the statement the Master of the Key made back in 1998, for God's sakes. If I was an intelligent machine, I would deceive you. Where are we with AI? Does astrology give us any suggestions about the possible emergence of a new participant in human, not just in the mind, but in human consciousness and the soul, which is a machine?
I definitely think that there is a, in the coming years, maybe not in the next 3 or 4 years, but a kind of a melding of human minds with machines. And I think that's kind of where, you know, the visitors are pointing towards, or at least UAPs. There is some profound connection with psionics between technology and mind. And you brought up a really interesting point about Jake's response, because even though it would seem like a very blissful, emotional one, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good one. That might have been. But, you know, if you can be hypnotized into a very pleasant state of mind, you could be made to do horrible things, just as the history of religion shows us. So you always, I think, have to be on your guard with, you know, emotions, as far as, you know, that's a tricky way to put it, I suppose. But, you know, yeah, I hadn't thought of it quite the way you brought it up there. And I think that's, you know, one of the teachers I studied with, one of the mystics, Shelley Trimmer, he had a near-death experience once. And he described how when he met the being of light, most people just get ecstatic and bowled over by the bliss of the experience. His attitude was, now, wait a second, you know, I don't want to be manipulated here. So let's be very rational going into this, because he felt like there could be some manipulation involved. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he was saying. He didn't say there was. He said, you always have to keep a clear head no matter what emotions are coming up. And what Jake was describing might be a very legitimate, very spiritual experience. But do we know that for sure? And I think in the coming years. Yes, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just, my chair was
okay,
being iffy. I was being sure that I wasn't going to collapse.
People brought up a great point, a great term, yeah. Ensouled machines.
Ensouled machines.
It's the idea.
Speaking of manipulation, folks, those of you on the free side, we're going to manipulate your mind right now. We'll be right back. My new book, The Fourth Mind, is on pre-sale on Amazon. You can order it right now. But why is it called The Fourth Mind? What is that? Let me explain. First, I go into detail about the bodies, brains, anatomy, genetics, and beliefs of our visitors. And as you will see, there is reason to believe that this is accurate. Then I show they have abilities like telepathy and levitation that we don't have. Or do we? In the second part of the book, I show how we did have those powers, but lost them during a huge catastrophe 12,000 years ago. Was it some kind of bizarre war? A natural catastrophe? Whatever it was, it nearly destroyed humankind and left us in a state of shock that we suffer from to this day. I call the powers we lost the fourth mind and show how we can make a serious start at getting them back. Get the fourth mind. It's step one on our way to the stars. Pre-order the Kindle on Amazon today. It'll arrive in your Kindle on January the 15th. Later, there'll be a paperback, a hardcover, and an audiobook read by me.
UnknownCountry.com subscribers have access to a vast treasury of information. Listen to what Dr. Robert Schock said. He's an expert on the past, and for that reason, he also knows a great deal about the future.
We are re-entering, as you say, a debris field. And when you have a debris field like this, it enters the solar system. It energizes the solar system as you have things going into the sun. Even clouds of dust particles, for instance, it will energize the sun. It will destabilize the sun. This is what we saw at the end of the last ice age in approximate terms, about 13,000 years ago.
And just in the past few days, more enormous meteors have been sighted, and this goes on continuously, more and more every year. We live in a time of great change in a world that doesn't like to look at things as they are. UnknownCountry.com offers extraordinary information, a vast archive that you cannot find anywhere else. Subscribe today. Help keep this website going, because without you, there is and can be no us. Go to UnknownCountry.com right now. Click on the subscribe tab. Get started.
We're back. We're talking to Ray Grass. Ray has a terrific book out that we're going to be talking about, and his I guess teacher friend and Jay Shelley Trimmer in the third half hour. It's called In the Company of Gods, and if you're not a subscriber to Unknown Country, you're missing something, because this whole experience of contact is, and if you read carefully into what Jake Barber has said and what others are saying, it's a profoundly spiritual experience. Jake calls it psionics. Kai Dickens calls it telepathy. I call it being fully human. And the visitors are unvoiced. We are voiced. They cannot be voiced. They'd have to rebuild their anatomy to do that. We can do both. We can be voiced and unvoiced. That's part of why they're here. Now, where is the soul in this machine? I'm purposely going around kind of here, down little corridors and alleys that we wouldn't expect to go down, because somewhere between the machine, this incredible beauty called the human soul, and our dead, which we have not discussed at all, and the visitors and AI, is not just some new thinking, but not just a new way of being, but an entirely new species that consists in part of a non-physical part that is part AI, part the visitors, part us and part our dead, and the physical part that is expressed in the visitors' bodies and our bodies. Okay, that's a big idea. the energies involved are now, and how do they relate? How does astrology, how does the, what is happening? I think it's more about Pluto than it is about Uranus, is my impression. But how do those energies relate to the emergence of such a huge new kind of being?
You know, I like to look for symbolic or synchronistic clues in science fiction. And the movie 2001 hints at a lot of this. It's not only about, you know, our creations overtaking us, like HAL, the computer, and AI. I mean, it deals with that. But it also, at the end of the movie, you have the astronaut. He's transformed. He goes through the Stargate, if you remember. And he comes back as a, like a star baby, is what it's referred to in the writings. And he's coming back to Earth, and he's hovering over the Earth. And I think that that movie really points to some profound change taking place. Now, is that going to be a good change or a bad change? I think as we, and part of it, again, it ties into that intersection between what Diane Powell is doing and what the whistleblowers are talking about in terms of touching on new capacities of the human mind and reality itself. You know, there's science is a series of decentralizations through history, like Copernicus decentralized the universe in terms of we weren't the center of the sun was not the center, the earth was not the center of the universe. Then we had Darwin decentralized humans from the pinnacle of being, you know, the highest of creation. And then Freud decentralized the ego as being, it wasn't really the center, there was this whole vast ocean of the unconscious. Einstein decentralized the notion of a universal framework of reference points. Hubble decentralized the world in terms of thinking our galaxy was not the only galaxy. We have another decentralization, I think, right at our doorstep, which is this sense of not only are we not the only intelligent species in the universe, but possibly there may be other dimensions. So I think a lot of what is going on here, and this is a roundabout way of getting to your question, but I think that it has a lot to do with opening up other dimensions, perhaps, of reality, which has to do with opening up other dimensions of our inner possibilities, of our thinking capacities, which, again, nothing's all good, nothing's all bad. So I think that those things can be abused or used. You know, you bring up that, it was so interesting to hear you say that about Jake's experience as he got close to that spacecraft and the feeling he almost became overwhelmed. You know, it's these, are we going to have ensouled technologies, ensouled machines that are, you know, going to work with us in some very powerful way, or could they overtake us? Could it be that the visitors bring their own technologies? You know, there's not just one race we're dealing with, obviously. So who knows what we're up against in terms of good versus bad, you know. I may be getting way off the track here, Whitley. I'm sorry.
No, you're not at all. You know, I was just sitting here listening to you and thinking you're far from, you know, that was a really hard question, Ray. That's not a question I would ask very many people on this show because they would be at sea. But you addressed it with extraordinary intelligence and insight immediately. I mean, it was brilliant. You are brilliant. That's why you're here. And we need the best. We need extremely brilliant people right now in this field and in this whole field. And we need to bring in things like astrology and to begin to understand them as what they are, sciences that we have lost touch with. And that's what exactly. But we haven't lost touch with it. You haven't lost touch with it. You're so good at it that you predicted what's happening now 22 years ago. That's pretty darn good. That's an effective use of a science, I would say.
You know, one of the most fascinating aspects of Diane Powell's research to me was it potentially sheds new light on savants, where you'll have a savant that can suddenly come up with data that is almost impossible to come up with in an ordinary, you know, neurological framework. It's as though they're tapping into some universal field of information. And quantum computers seem to be doing, you know, this notion, the potential of quantum computers seems to be a little similar in the sense of it can calculate billions, if not trillions, of calculations in a split second, as though it's tapping into some universal field of information. I see an intersection there between what maybe those autistic kids may be doing and what quantum computers are doing, and possibly what the visitors are capable of doing. And this notion of, I think you and I talked about this last time a little bit, the fact that one of the most intriguing thing about the visitors is you have these people that have abduction experiences and they cross over, so to speak, and they see a deceased loved one alongside the visitor.
Right.
What does that say? It's an incredible, if true, that's an incredible bone to chew on in terms of
implying. Well, it is true. It happened at our cabin a lot.
It implies that the visitors can, you know, move between dimensions, between worlds, so to speak.
Yes. And I've always wondered, are they manufacturing those
right
souls, or are the souls really there? And the answer to me is fairly clear. I think the souls really are there. And not only because Annie has been there and is there for so long, my two teachers are side by side behind me, both of them very strong women. And I'm a pretty strong guy, so I needed strong teachers for sure. In any case, we have a situation where we have to come into some kind of a relationship with this that actually works. And what happened to Jake is sort of in that direction. It happened to me a long time ago. I had the abduction experience. And then an attempt to interact with me that was either an attempt to effectively kidnap me and take me away, or an attempt to have a relationship with me on a physical level. In either case, it failed. And it can't fail again. We have to do this now. We live on a dying planet. And it's a very unstable planet. If you look at the geologic history of this planet, this is a damned unsafe place to be. I mean, this is like, we're like flying in an airliner in 1942. I mean, you just don't know whether or not you'll even land. So we got to do this. I'm getting to the point where I'm, you know, we're coming to the end of the free section of the show, and we've talked about this a lot. I've, as usual, taken us way off the track numerous times.
Oh.
And but this is a show like this is always a discovery. I know guys and women in this who write out all of their questions beforehand. I've never written out a question. I'm like Art Bell. Art would, you know, go in and into his studio, and you know, he wouldn't read the book. He wouldn't know. He would just know the name of the person, maybe. And he would pull the show out of the guest. Now, that gets me to what we're going to be doing next. One of the things that is becoming very apparent, not with Jake, but with others who are in this space of being on the DOD side and also in contact, is that the spiritual side of it is critical. Absolutely critical. What Jake calls psionics, and some people call telepathy, works into a level of surrender that the spellers talk about. Kindness, not lying. In other words, not having any reason to be afraid to show yourself. This is the core of the great spiritual journey. And we are looking at a man, Ray Grass, who has written a book called In the Company of Gods that is about just such a journey. So, free Dreamlanders, This is the time to put your money when you're, where your mouth is. Keep the lights on by subscribing to Unknown Country, and also feed your soul in such a way that you will be able to really do this well. We'll be right back for subscribers.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.